just stay away from him. Just never go out with him.
From the moment she met him.
No chance. I don't go out with cowardly scumbags.
She knew he was egotistical.
Sex with me is very good.
I'm sure.
Why, have you heard something?
And opinionated.
I don't consider myself a journalist.
I wouldn't brag about it.
I'm a newspaper man.
From the moment he met her, he knew. She was intellectual.
Maybe I'm too cerebral. That means brain.
I don't know what that means.
And emotional.
I feel great. I really do.
She wanted commitment.
I will start with
monogamy.
He wanted what every man wants.
Just a side order of sex, please.
What?
Then, suddenly, one night,
they both got what they wanted.
You two are both terrific. Ever considered being on TV?
Yes.
Yes.
No. This is he said.
She said.
There are two sides to every story.
I feel so stupid.
At last, there's a movie with both of them. His.
Susan.
Maybe we could get together next week, go to an art opening or something.
That would be great. Give me a call.
And hers.
Susan.
Let's get together next week and go to the roller derby or something.
Okay, that sounds good, but you gotta wear that dress.
I don't know why we always have to do what you want to do.
What are you talking about? We spent my vacation to visit your parents.
You use condoms?
Well.
Oh, he's got condom written all over him.
We're just trying to get to know him, honey.
You'll see him through her eyes.
Honey, you okay?
Why don't you two just go to bed together and get it over with?
And her through his.
Don't you ever think about getting married?
Kevin Bacon.
Why fix it if it ain't broken? And that's the way I see it.
Ow!
Elizabeth Perkins.
Looking up at your fat, smug, fat face, I couldn't help myself.
Oh, well, thanks, honey. That's quite an apology.
He said.
She said.
Where's the spot?
On your left boob.
What the hell is she doing?
Honey, honey, we're both on camera.
This is Box Office Bylines, a podcast about movies, about journalism. We've got 50 Shades of Grey and 10 days to learn how to lose a guy. I am Jacob Boone in Yellowknife, joined as always by...
She said, Tara Thorne in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where things are grim here. Then they're grim there, aren't they?
I think Yellowknife currently is the only place in Canada without any cases, but that's because we have one, but he's an outside worker, so they don't count that.
Okay. That's some funny accounting. Yeah, it's it's real tough. We're back in a modified lockdown in Halifax, so it just means there were a few fun things to do, and now those are gone. So life isn't too different.
You can't go to the bars, the clubs. You
can't go to the clubs and or see improv anymore. So
you can't have a dinner party
with your closest of your 10 friends. You can't do it. You could have it with 5 friends if you would like, which is still a lot. I don't think I have 5 people I would want in my house at one time.
Because you need 5 chairs at you need a kitchen table.
Yeah, I don't have a kitchen table. I have an island.
To have 5 people around it.
Yeah.
I have one that 4 is...
tight.
Four, it's meant for 4, but that's tricky.
So,
I hope that gets better soon.
Thanks, and I hope you stay free. I hope the accounting works in your favor forever.
Hopefully. Until then, we'll keep watching them movies.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Tara, I think maybe you better quit.
I think you better quit. Wait, counterpoint. No, I shouldn't. What?
Quit letting shit slip. Or you'll be leaving with a fat lip.
Uh-oh.
Because this week, it's all about that he said, she said bullshit.
Oh, no. Now we have to put an explicit warning on the episode.
Oh, sorry.
No, I never do it. Tough shit.
Friend of the show and listener, Fred Durst, who contributed.
And recommended this movie. Poem. Thanks so much, Fred.
We are this week watching He Said, She Said, 1991, directed by, and this is a very important element of what we're going to talk about, two directors, Ken Kwapis and Marissa Silver, written by Brian Hofeld, starring Kevin Bacon from X-Men First Class, Elizabeth Perkins, Nathan Lane, and Sharon Stone in a supporting role.
Sharon Stone in this movie is so funny because... I mean, we'll get to it, but I just need to say right off the outset that Sharon Stone's like Kevin Bacon's slutty whatever.
Friend with benefits?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she is so close to being in Basic Instinct, and she's like sixth billed or something. It's like...
This came out like 6 months before
Basic Instinct. Yeah, it was like a huge casting accident.
It's very much Brie Larson in Trainwreck as the sister.
100%.
Had you heard of or seen this film?
I had not. And, you know, I have a soft spot for like an underseen 90s romantic comedy, but not. Mm-hmm. I don't have any spots for this one. Like, rage spots in
my
eyes.
Is joining the list of those other rom-com 90s journalism films we've watched. Like,
I Love Trouble.
I Love Trouble. There's another one, wasn't there?
Yeah. None of them have been good. That's why we don't remember.
No. So it's sort of the 90s battle of the sexes all smooshed together with journalism for no reason at all. And
like, truly. And also a bizarre timeline.
Yeah. So the central concept here is it's sort of like Rashomon meets His Girl Friday.
Exactly.
When Harry Met Sally. Where... Kevin Bacon and Elizabeth Perkins are dueling columnists in this Baltimore newspaper, Baltimore Sun, and they get together, they build a relationship, they break up a little bit, or they have a big fight, and spoilers, I guess, they get back together at the end. And the first half of the movie is told through Kevin Bacon's point of view, both in the present and also his memories of the past. And how they got together. And that's directed by Ken Kwapis, who directed Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
One of my favorite sci-fi series.
13 episodes of The Office.
Oh, yeah.
We can talk about those. And the second half is the same story from Elizabeth Perkins' point of view and memory, directed by Marissa Silver. And Silver and Kwapis were boyfriend-girlfriend during the filming. They got engaged during the filming. And I think are still married.
Can I just say that I watched sure. this movie and I did not know that.
Okay. Wait, you didn't know
I didn't that? Know there were two halves and that it was I just thought it was like some weird time loop. I really didn't.
Like Sliding Doors or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I didn't know that it was such high concept.
Yeah, I will say and that's I think one of the biggest problems with that is that it takes so long. We're with Kevin Bacon's viewpoint for half the movie before something weird happens and we flip back. And so you don't realize you're supposed to be watching this, as you said, weird concept.
Mm-hmm. High concept. And weird.
High concept. And weird. Both.
Also, Kevin Bacon's character is very odious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like as a performer, he's a delight, but like his dude sucks. So
you didn't wait, but like
no, I didn't know Jacob. I didn't know.
Because you see the same like he remembers their first date.
Yep.
As her asking him out, and then we cut to the two of them eating pasta at this.
And
Italian
he reads,
restaurant
yeah, and he
outside.
Reads a menu that says monogamy, commitment.
Yeah,
commitment.
It's a weird.
Yeah, I thought it was just magic realism.
Okay, but then an hour later,
yeah, same
we
thing.
Have that scene again. She meets her friend inside the bar. She turned him down for the date, meets her friend, and then runs into him outside. You just thought that was like.
I didn't know. I thought we were in a different timeline. Like, I thought it was in the past or possibly the future.
That is another drawback is when you're doing this much of a high concept. To have, I mean, I think three different interlocking flashback scenes. Like, it jumps around in time more than, I assume, Tenet, or the characters in Tenet.
Or Little Women, Greta Gerwig version.
Yeah, it's hard. It is difficult to place when things are happening.
And if you're playing...
I knew about those two halves, but it was still tricky to find out, like, where are we within their... relationship where they first get together and then they break up but then they get back together but then they really break up but then at the end they get back together
because we start with them together, which is not generally a place a romantic comedy starts, and I kind of like that. And then she
she physically assaults him
on screen. Yeah. But yeah, I guess this is why Soderbergh uses different film stocks, so you know where you are.
That would help.
Yeah. It's like, turn, oh, this is cold turn, and blue. Turns it's the down best. The
volume in the other three frames of time code. Remember that one?
No.
Remember where it was like four different movies happening all at the same time?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I guess that foretold a lot of things, didn't it? That one.
Did it?
I mean, that's what we do now. We look at four screens all day.
He's
truly a Soderbergh. Maverick.
We keep bringing him up. Yeah. So,
okay. So, I mean, this conversation is not quite hindered because I didn't. I clearly was on my phone for some of the movie. I will say Elizabeth Perkins is someone I very much enjoy, and it's interesting to see the 90s. There's a few people they kind of tried to make famous that just didn't stick. Elizabeth Perkins is an excellent character actress. She was on Weeds, and her natural speaking voice is like low, but in this she's like talking like she's using like a high Meg Ryan kind of romantic comedy voice. It's weird.
Very feminine.
Yeah.
They do have to play up. They don't have to, but they choose to. The sort of men are like dogs.
Yeah.
And women are irrational. And one wants monogamy and one wants sex. And the truth is somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So it's a very sort of centrist newspaper / romantic comedy movie.
Yes, Kim, let's talk about the newspapering and where it comes in. Because it's sort of it's sort of minimal. They're like columnists.
There's a lot there at the beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they're both fighting for the same. He gets, so it's like the editor, the managing editor gives him an opinion column, promises some, because some guy's retired if they have space. But she was already promised that spot by the opinion section editor.
Classic.
So they decide that they'll both do it, and under the assumption that whoever is best, that's who they'll get. But people, I guess, like reading the different dueling takes. Which, you know, that's standard.
Dueling diners.
And and that builds a brand. And then it transitions into, like, not a TV show, but a TV segment on the morning news show in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
That's unclear. I don't remember how that happened.
It was just sort of like, you guys are wacky together. I bet you'd pop on TV. I don't remember either. But, like, that kind of thing does happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But she brings up repeatedly how she wants to be, to go write for the New York Times. That's her dream.
The New York Times loves her work, apparently. She just needs to make the jump.
It is great, too, that she complains that, like, her staff job with the Baltimore Sun is not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Although I will say, Baltimore, The Wire aside, Baltimore, not really a journalism movie town, usually.
Well, this is the second film, isn't it? Did we watch another one in Baltimore?
Well, I mean, All the President's Men probably had some scenes in Baltimore because it's so close.
I don't think that's true. but Kevin Bacon just wants to be famous. He brings that up several times. He just wants to be like well-known and read about. So he's he's not the serious journalist and she is. And that's also a source of conflict that goes away pretty fast.
What is the proof of her serious journalism?
There's also, he has night terrors.
Right, he does.
Which is this thing that keeps happening where he like wakes up and starts crying. And it's very unsettling in an otherwise light, to the point of superficiality 90s rom-com to suddenly have a character like having great, and Kevin Bacon I think acts it very well, but it brings things to a stop because it's difficult and painful to watch. Yeah, him.
And Sharon Stone's like, whatever, you idiot.
Okay.
Also, but like guys having existential whatever in the 90s was a big thing. Like, listen, I love Reality Bites too.
Doesn't he go to a therapist at one point, and it's like a head shrinker? And the therapist brings out a puppet, and we're all supposed to be rolling our eyes.
Yes, the puppet. Classic.
Yeah. Classic 90s.
Yeah. In First Wives Club, it was a Nerf bat, and then she found out that her husband was sleeping with her therapist, so she beat the shit out of both of them with the bat.
Okay.
Therapy.
Well, damn, Tara. Did you like anything about the film?
No, I didn't like it. Okay. All right. They kept saying. Well, obviously, I didn't even know what happened, so that's how invested
apparently,
I was.
Yeah.
I like both of the actors. They kept saying "go to bed," like as in sleep with, which is a line straight out of when Harry Met Sally. But they kept saying, "I'm not going to go to bed with them," or "you should go to bed with them," or whatever. It's just like, ugh, I didn't like it. And yeah, it was weird. It was weird seeing Sharon Stone with a nothing part.
Yeah.
Considering the star she became very quickly. I don't know. It just felt very obvious and not very nuanced. And again, I didn't understand the timeline situation. Did you like it?
No, not really. There were if anything, the concept.
It's a good idea.
Maybe it's a good idea, but it almost feels like. It's a good idea that wasn't enacted well, so then it becomes, should they have succeeded? How could they have succeeded? Or should they have just scrapped the concept altogether and just had dueling newspaper romance movie?
Yeah, like, you don't, like, he said, she said, like, clearly is a concept they pitched without having written anything. And it's like, two sides of the same story. It's sort of like, okay, but you're right. They could have just had these things and worked out their relationship.
So the genesis of the film apparently was during a night out in Paris, France.
Classic.
The two were telling the story of how they had gotten together, and they noticed that their stories were different in perspective, so they decided to make a movie based on that concept.
Hmm.
And Paramount Pictures was like, yes, go ahead.
Okay. There's a Jessica Chastain who is young old man and X-Man. Sorry, I'm trying to think of a name. James McAvoy.
Young old man.
I knew who I meant. He's young Magneto, isn't he? No, that's
He
Fassi.
Plays young Charles Xavier.
Right. Okay. Anyway, and they're in a movie together called, I honestly think it's Her and Him or She and Him.
Him and Her.
Him and Her. Like, it honestly. And then
She and
it's
him.
It was originally a 3-hour movie. You saw the whole movie from one person's perspective and then from the other, and it was a lot more dramatic. So this has been tried a few times. I have not seen it done successfully. I guess Sliding Doors.
Is something about it that lends itself to a journalism movie trying to present how the reality of something can be very different than what gets written about. Or how something gets written about gets different on the page and gets read, but doesn't work great here.
No, it doesn't. And there's no, I wish there was some journalism at the root of the conflict. Like, it really isn't. It's more like they're trying to go big time with their little show, but they've already broken up or are about to, and she blows the audition.
Yeah, the like big time producer is going to come down to watch them, and he actually likes the fight, and so it's like Nathan Lane is Bacon's manager, who's just desperate to land like a network job. That's like the biggest conflict professionally for them. There's maybe too much of that, frankly. But again, it jumps around so much that you forget that's happening, and there's no stakes to it. Because we also meet their downstairs neighbors, and we spend some time with them.
Oh, yeah. Which I felt was like, I hate to say his name, but that felt like a Woody Allen fucking Annie Hall ripoff, where it's like, hey, old people, tell me about love.
There's definitely some Woody Allen influence here. Like, all the, like, hallucinations or, like, magic realism elements, the monogamy on the menu, or, like, when he pictures all of his friends inviting him to come play, but he can't because he moved in, so now he can't leave because he's got a ball and chain.
Yeah, literally someone bikes under his window and is like, sex? He's like, I can't.
It's too cutesy.
I'm not against magic realism as a concept. I just think it,
But there's too much happening here to make sense of
I like the story. What the hell? Yeah, there's a lot.
So,
like, for a lot going on, we don't really have much to say about it, which I think says it all.
I was very confused when, timeline wise, in his memory, they have dinner. They walk along. He helps find her contact lens that falls out, which is very 90s.
He steps on it, don't forget.
He steps on her because it's made of glass because it's the 90s. And they see the truck drop off the new edition of the paper, and they rush over to see whose column won. Then she goes home. He goes to a bar to meet up with Sharon Stone.
And they think that's cute, too.
Several people inside reading the newspaper that just got delivered.
At night.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, like, what time is this?
Yeah, because like 11
presumably
p.m.
that's tomorrow's paper. So this would have to be like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. earlier?
I don't know. I mean, there might be an evening edition. And it seems like it's like 11. You know what I mean?
But like, why would the evening edition be put out at like 10 p.m.?
Yeah.
And then in her memory, she comes home with an armload of the papers, but it's bright morning light.
Oh.
I was baffled by that.
Well, again, I'm not helping you out. I'm being your bad co-host this week because I didn't pay attention.
That's fine. There's several scenes where someone tries to get Kevin Bacon to dance, which is nice. Because it reminds us of like a better movie.
Yes.
Oh, what did you think of the interpretive dance scene?
I do not recall it.
Remember they go see for their column, there's
and
like
they
a
laugh.
Dance
yeah.
performance that people have said is too erotic, it's pornography.
Yeah.
And so they go
like
see
miming.
It. And in his memory, it's like grunting, thrusting, masculine sort of sex. And in her memory, it's this tender, graceful, fluid performance. And she imagines Kevin Bacon on stage. So we do get a little bit of him dancing.
Give the people what they want.
But that wasn't enough to make you realize it was the same thing. Did you think they just went and saw it twice?
I honestly didn't know. I am blown away. I'm not blown away because like I ultimately don't care, but I am surprised that this was the concept. No, I really didn't. I was just sort of like, oh, they're back at the show again. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
This isn't great journalism right now. Like not knowing what the movie's about.
Well, we can take a break and maybe
yes,
come back with some
I
trivia.
Hope
I
some
do
90s
have one
trivia. Yeah.
So one question before we go. Mm. At one point, he said, Kevin Bacon says, "I'm not a journalist. I'm a newspaper man."
Mm.
What's the difference there? And which would you consider yourself to be?
Oh, journalist. Like.
I've had the argument before about like what's the better term, journalist or reporter.
Right. Journalist makes it sound like you're investigative and respectable. Newspaper man does not sound respectable to me.
It sounds very old-timey and full of itself.
Yeah. He's like, I have many bottles in my desk at work and I smoke there as well.
Yeah. And I cannot understand computers.
No.
I cannot function in anything other than print.
And just the fact, that it's like, I am a newspaper man as opposed to a journalist, which could be anybody, but a newspaperman, like, it just implies ego. Like, the full of itself part, it's like, I'm a guy people know. And that's what he wanted to be. And so, fair, I guess.
Okay. All right.
What do you think the difference is?
No, I think that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
I still like journalist more than reporter.
Yeah, like
I think that's just the way the word is.
Yeah, I never called myself a journalist unless I was going through customs. Which just made it sound impressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, why don't we take a break? We will come back and talk some trivia.
Sounds good.
Ready to order, miss?
Oh, yeah. I will start with monogamy, then commitment. And then I will have the marriage.
The marriage comes with commitment, ma'am. Oh. Unless you'd like something on the side.
Oh, no, not me. But maybe children later.
Good choice, ma'am.
I understand the monogamy is very good here.
And for you, sir?
Just a side order of sacks, please.
I can't do that, sir. It only comes with commitment.
All right, I'll make it easy for you. I'll take the complete dinner,
You hold the commitment, you hold the monogamy, and just bring me the sex. That way nobody gets in trouble and I get what I want.
You want me to hold the monogamy?
Dan, can't you read the sign? Do you need another minute to decide? I hear the ravioli here is great.
Yeah, sure. Ravioli sounds fun.
And you're back with Box Office Bylines talking about an underseen 90s non-gem. He said, she said. Jacob, is there possibly any trivia about this or did anyone care?
Yeah, there is. It's wasn't a hugely successful movie and kind of got a little forgotten about, but there is some interesting tidbits that we can talk about. First off, this was not the first movie about relationships to split the film into two opposing segments, titling them with gender-specific terms.
Oh.
That was the Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor television movie, Divorce His, Divorce Hers, from 1973.
What a weird title.
Yeah.
Divorce His.
Divorce His, Divorce Hers.
What? Okay, yeah. Well, famously, that didn't end well.
This was one of five Sharon Stone movies released in 1991, all of them before her big breakthrough role in Basic Instinct, 1992. The other four is being, well, can you guess?
No.
Probably not. I haven't heard
Demolition Man? I don't know.
No, Scissors.
Oh, Scissors.
You know Scissors?
No, I was thinking of Sliver.
Okay. Year of the Gun.
Mm.
Diary of a Hitman. And Where Sleeping Dogs Lie.
Hmm. You know what's interesting is people think, like, getting famous is so hard. I don't think people realize that sometimes. It's because, like, when someone like Jennifer Lawrence is like, I'm just a regular person. It's like, yeah, and your parents moved you to L.A. when you were 15. Like, it's so hard to be famous. So when you see, like, five Sharon Stone movies in 1 year and then she explodes the next year, like, it's all part of a master plan. You know what I mean? That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think sometimes people get lucky in terms of how a movie gets received and sort of cements their status as a celebrity.
Definitely. You can't just buy it. Like, there has to be a perfect storm of something, but clearly that was it. It was like, oh, obviously her momentum was building and then she just got this trashy thing that happened to explode.
Jennifer Lawrence is a great example because, like, she was in a bunch of things, including that X-Men movie with Kevin Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just, like, a secondary supporting actress. She wasn't the star of the film,
yeah,
so to speak. And then Hunger Games came out, 8 months later? And suddenly all these future X-Men movies had to be about Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Although she increasingly did not want to be a part of them.
Yeah. Although she was nominated for an Oscar for her first film, which is Winter's Bone, which is an excellent film.
Well, of course, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yes, that's your first Oscar,
like an artsy
whatever.
Thing.
It's very artsy and very dark.
And when did the Bradley Cooper one come out?
Silver Linings Playbook, 2000.
It was post-Hunger Games?
13? Yeah.
And that really, I think, suddenly she was, the Hunger Games star was getting an Oscar, won an Oscar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that then she was on her way.
Yeah.
To and Passengers. With
although,
Chris
I haven't,
Pratt.
Yeah, I haven't seen Jennifer Lawrence in a long time, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think she's taking a little break.
She got married.
Oh, did she? Good for
her.
She came out as a Republican recently.
Oh, Jenny. Anyway.
Anyway.
You can subscribe to our Jennifer Lawrence podcast in the new year. Where are you at, Jenny? It's going to be called. Okay, continue.
Okay. According to the film's audio commentary, in the He Said segment, Perkins plays her part from Kevin Bacon's point of view, while in She Said, Bacon plays his part from Perkins' point of view. It would be a fun actor challenge.
It would.
To do
oh,
that.
So that's why the voice. It was intentional.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. But did your voice go down?
God,
in
I'm
the
an
second
idiot.
Half?
You should fire me from this show.
Considered for the role of Wally Thurman, which in the end went to Nathan Lane, were Jason Alexander and Kevin Spacey.
Interesting. Alexander would have just hit with Seinfeld, right?
Yeah, right around there.
And Pretty Woman. Maybe he did Pretty Woman instead. Smart move!
The first drafts of the screenplay set the picture in Minneapolis-St. Paul, the twin cities, so as to reflect the two male and female perspectives.
Like, relax.
That was changed to Baltimore, I think, for budget tax reasons. Purposes. Yeah.
God.
Included in the IMDb trivia was that since the movie's release, the phrase "he said, she said" has gone into the vernacular of popular culture, as in it's attributed
to
this
the
movie.
Yeah, right.
That seems to be wrong.
Yeah, I don't agree.
So Marion Hutton had a song in 1948 called "He Says." He says, she says with a Z. Sorry. And then also there was a book in 1976 titled "He Said," or "She Said, He Said." The New York Times, I looked into this, says the phrase actually gained popularity and moved into the common public parlance from the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings.
Mm.
That was in October of 1991. This movie came out in February, so there may be some connection in that it was already kind of something people were aware of that year, and then it got applied to this big sexual assault case. But really, it's the Anita Hill Thomas hearings where it becomes like a legal defense and becomes right. Something that people talk about.
Huh.
So there you go. It was also the name of an unrelated TV movie in 2006 and a 2011 romantic comedy, which I think may or may not have been a remake. Neither did too successfully. The name of the restaurant that is featured repeatedly is called Punta de Vista, Point of View, a reference both to their mm-hmm, jobs mm-hmm. as well as their conflicting points of view. There you go. Silver, so Marissa Silver, one of the directors, the female director, said it was about this movie. It was a very formalistic project and we had a good time. But when I was finished with that and thinking about what to do next, I had a very strong feeling that the next thing I needed to do was to no longer make movies. And she hasn't since.
Huh.
That was her
well,
last
she gets to live off of office residuals, so she made a choice if she didn't want to work anymore.
Quapis, while working on this film, was sent a script for a new TV show and was initially very dismissive of it, feeling directing episodic TV was not where any good directors went. That TV show was the Larry Sanders Show.
Mm.
He read it, was blown away, and that began his move to television. I mean, The Office, so many very good Office episodes, including the premiere and the finale.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of other TV episodes he's directed. He actually wrote a book, I believe, on directing episodic TV.
That's interesting because, yeah, in the 90s, TV was still really, like, it was seen as film's poor cousin. And that has now flipped. And now, actually, it's not even flipped. It's, like, it's all the same. I mean, I still think you want an Oscar over an Emmy, but largely the prestige is similar now.
Yeah. So, you know, he's doing okay. I guess they both are because they're married, having a nice son. This and a couple other box office flops around the same time, though it did make like $9 million off a $2 million budget, convinced Kevin Bacon to go from leading man to character actor. He look for smaller parts in prestige pictures as opposed to starring roles. He said, this was a couple of years ago, I think, when I made the choice not to look for things where my name was above the title, that started a whole new thing for me with JFK, A Few Good Men, Apollo 13, and The River Wild.
Yeah, that's a good stretch.
So it's interesting that this is largely forgotten, and yet
it changed so much.
It like led to this director of TV episodes that we quite love, and Kevin Bacon starring in some really great movies.
And also, like, him doing character parts is why it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So, there you go.
Take a note, Tom Cruise.
One last bit of trivia that you'll enjoy, I think. Marissa Silver is the daughter of guess who?
It's not Spielberg.
No.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of filmmakers with Silver. I can't think of any.
Joan Micklin Silver.
Oh my goodness.
Director of one of our first films we watched that we love, Between the Lines.
Wow. I feel like you are personally responsible for resurrecting Between the Lines.
I thought when I found this out about this movie, I was very charmed.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great that both mom and daughter directed journalism movies.
And mom
very
did a
different
better
films.
Job.
But I think that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's all I have.
That's all. For that's a nice note to end for on. A high concept movie with people we like. Meh. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Sometimes things are lost for a reason.
It's all of the Battle of the Sexes stuff. If the movie was just one storyline, probably would have been more offensive or anger-inducing. But because it was so confusing, it just feels like you almost end up with sympathy for it as this, like, failure.
Right. Yeah, because it's not a human rights complaint. It's just sort of like, meh.
Yeah. So, largely forgettable. Still enjoyed it more than, like, I Love Trouble.
Yes. So, they clearly liked each other.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. This is going to go down as our shortest episode ever, also.
So far.
So far.
This is also, we are now, this is our 27th episode, which means we have surpassed our previous podcast, 25 for 25, of which we made 26 episodes.
Because why? Of course we did.
Oh, we needed to do a holiday special.
We did.
So that's exciting, Tara.
Yes, congratulations, Jacob. We did it.
Yeah. And we're going to keep cranking them out. Probably. Maybe.
You know,
there's going to be another lockdown, so what else?
Yeah, true. And 27 is the age that a lot of famous people die. I'm just saying.
Uh-oh. Well, we have to at least make a couple more then.
Okay.
And we will. We already have watched another movie that we're going to talk about next week.
I am very excited about this one. I like when we do the ones I know I like.
The ones where you know what's going on?
Yeah.
But another movie that does play around with timelines.
It does, but not in a confusing way at all.
Well, I was confused about some things.
Okay, all right. 13 going on 30 with a very Jennifer Garner, possibly has never been more charming on screen.
In Daredevil?
Not even as the voice of reason in Juno? No. All right, well, I'm excited to talk about that next time.
Yeah, and until then, what do we say at the end?
You have a bunch of stuff. The balcony's closed?
Well, why don't we, in honor of the mother and daughter director Silvers, stay between the lines and keep shipping the news.
Thanks, Jacob.
Bye.